From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're having a wonderful conversation, or going to have a wonderful conversation with someone from the Enduring Families Project, which I'll explain in a moment, and someone from the La Crosse County Historical Society. And we're talking about an upcoming Black History event that is going to be happening at the La Crosse Area Heritage Center coming up this weekend, and you'll definitely want to be aware of that. So first, let me welcome my guests today. Denise Christie is a producer and actor with the Enduring Families Project and has been on this program before. Denise, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We have Amy Vock, who's with us. She's the curator with the La Crosse County Historical Society. Amy, welcome to Newsmakers. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll talk broadly about the Historical Society and the Heritage Center and everything. Let's start with the Enduring Families Project, because that program is kind of the impetus of today's discussion. Denise, your project, if I'm summing it up correctly, kind of takes historical figures from the La Crosse area and around the La Crosse area broadly, and depicts them with using live actors. And you've done live presentations, you've done theatrical things, you've done video, like short films based on these characters, and all kinds of things. How do you discover? Where do you find information about the characters that you want the Enduring Families Project to portray?
Well, thankfully, our project has a very established historian. The co-founder of the Enduring Families Project is Rebecca Mormon Krieger. She is the historian and the writer of these monologues. So she is the one that found the information about the people whose stories we told. And she has mentioned oftentimes that her primary resource, and very important resource was Dr. Bruce Mauser, who was a professor emeritus at UW La Crosse. And he wrote an extensive book about Black La Crosse from 1850 to 1906, 1902, early 1900s. And he also wrote a book about George Edwin Taylor, who was the first African-American to run for president, who was from La Crosse, who grew up in the West Salem area. And he also wrote papers and a book about George Pogue, who was also a UW La Crosse resident who spent his childhood in La Crosse. So I just put those names out because Bruce Mauser wrote about them in addition to a lot of other African-Americans that lived in the area, several hundred, as a matter of fact, from La Crosse's early beginnings till the early 1900s. So that was the beginning source for finding the information upon which to build the reenactments that we have eventually begun telling.
How did that come from, like, written information, and how did you all get the idea that that these stories needed to be told not just in writing, but sort of live and in living color, so to speak?
Rebecca had found the information, and we wanted to put it out there. And I gotta tell you, the avenue that I found most effective was one that was borrowed from the La Crosse County Historical Society. They have a wonderful Silent City annual tribute to La Crosse residents that they do in Oak Grove Cemetery. Amy can tell you about that much more. But I went there one year and I saw some of the actors by some of the graves portraying some of the people from the area. And I found it so exciting to see reenactments people actually in costume telling the story of the people that they represented at the grave sites. And I thought that was a wonderful way to tell the stories of these historical figures who were laid to rest there. And so I presented that. Well, I think Rebecca and I thought that would be a good vehicle for telling these stories through monologues. So we just started looking for money, people who would grant, be interested in granting the funding so that we could start rehearsals. And once we had the monologues finished, we would come together. Well, the actors would come together and rehearse, and we'd try to get the funding so that we could start, you know, the grounds for putting the things together. And the bus tour that started it all in 2018 was the jump off point. We had funding from lots of interesting caring groups in the community, and we got the funding, and getting the actors was challenging, but we somehow managed to do it. I was new to the area, and I was put in touch with the founder of Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. His name is Shondell Spivey, and he put me in touch with a group of young people who some had done some, one had done experience at the community theater, the others had an interest in theater. We got together, we rehearsed, and then we eventually put that bus tour together for Juneteenth of 2018. After that, the rest is history.
It's interesting. And Amy, the Historical Society has been involved as a fiscal sponsor of this project for a while. When did you become aware of the Enduring Families Project, or maybe even you were aware of the idea of it before it was a thing? Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I think we actually knew about it since the very beginning, and we actually published some of the research that Rebecca Mormon-Krieger and Denise were working on. But I think in 2019, we officially became the fiscal sponsor for the Enduring Families Project. We've always kind of served as a supporting agency, helping with a little bit of research and resources and things like that.
Denise referenced the Silent City Project as sort of inspirational to this kind of event. Talk about what happens for those who are uninitiated. What happens at Silent City?
Yeah, so Silent City is a program that the Historical Society puts on once a year. 2024 is actually our 25th anniversary of Silent City programs here in La Crosse.
Wow.
So it happens once a year in the cemetery. We do a whole bunch of research and gather characters based on a theme. So this past year, we focused on food. So we had different grocery store owners and people that are manufacturing food and things like that. We've done the Civil War, artists, just various things over the past. It's kind of a small, digestible dose of local history through storytelling, where people can really connect to the stories based on a theme and see the reenactors and connect to local history.
Small digestible dose of history through storytelling, and that's I can see now the inspirational connection between the two, because I've seen a couple of incarnations of the Enduring Families Project, Denise, and how you present that material. I've seen videos, I've seen in-person presentations, and these are not long drawn out dramas with like invented conversations between characters. They are all very, very accessible, where people can get a snapshot of who these individuals were and the roles that they played in our community. How many people has your project portrayed up to this point?
Right now, we have 11 videos, started with 4 stories. And at that first bus tour, there were 4 stories told. And now we have blossomed into 11 stories. And even within some of those stories, there are additional people who are mentioned. But it was just a matter of starting with those four and then getting to know people in the community and recruiting others from other theater groups like the Muse Theater. There were some actors with the Muse Theater that we were able to recruit and just getting into some community activities. And one person I literally just walked up to in a restaurant, Daryl Ferguson, and just talked to him and just, he turned out to be a very fortuitous event because he's been with us from the beginning too. So it's just blossomed out. It's so organic because it's hard to picture the beginnings because it's all been so gradual and flowering.
You talked about that fortuitous conversation with Daryl Ferguson, but then earlier you referenced really having a hard time recruiting actors to some of these roles. Is that because some people lacked theatrical experience or needed to be convinced that they could do it, or what?
There are a lot of Black artists in La Crosse, but it's hard to find them. It's different than living in Chicago or Minneapolis, where you have a larger Black community base. This community has a very small percentage of African Americans, so it is a challenge to find people. That's why when you see a gentleman come into a restaurant and he looks stately, you go up to him and talk to him, which is what I did with Daryl, because you don't know when you're going to see another African-American. Let's just say the circumstances are different. This mm-hmm. is a very Eurocentric area, which is why the stories are so compelling. It's interesting knowing that there was a good, solid Black community within this Eurocentric area. Now, it may not be a big deal in Milwaukee or New York, again, where there's a stronger Black community. But here, it's important to know that. And you can tell that people are interested in knowing about this little known history because so many organizations have asked for us to do presentations as a result. They say, I didn't know that. I've lived in La Crosse for 60 years.
You said that this project kind of came to mind. You were somewhat early in your time in La Crosse, Denise. Were you involved in this kind of work before you arrived in La Crosse, or what is it about your previous experience that kind of prepared you for this?
Rebecca and I were both Milwaukee public school teachers. We both taught at Milwaukee High School of the Arts. She had done a production at Milwaukee High School of the Arts about Milwaukee history, just general history. So she had always been a part of that facet. Then she moved here. I moved here. Rebecca has family here. My husband's family, I'm married to a Moss. The Mosses are descendants of the original Mosses who moved to La Crosse in 1857. So my husband's family is here. So I moved here. She was here. And so that's how she started compiling information about the African Americans that lived in this area. So that's how the subject matter came to be.
And so it came about that you and Rebecca had sort of this mutual interest in the subject matter from back in your days in Milwaukee.
She had it. She recruited me on because she had said, well, you know, there is a facet of African-American history and I'd like for you to be a part of it. And then when this Bruce Mauser book, you know, kind of came into being, then I got to work, you know, after she decided to start writing these stories. And then I started getting to work on looking for community people who would be interested in helping us put the project together. Again, getting the grant money for all of this and talking to people, knocking on the doors of the school district and the library and a senior citizen centers and, you know, whoever would listen to us, whoever would want to hear our stories. And between getting the funding and getting the interest and getting the actors, you know, it was just a matter of putting all the pieces together so we could get that bus tour going and then, you know, take it from there.
That's Denise Christie of the Enduring Families Project. Also with us today, Amy Vock, who's with the La Crosse County Historical Society. And we're talking about both of those organizations, especially an event that's upcoming this Saturday at 2 p.m. at the La Crosse Area Heritage Center. And that event is free for members of the Historical Society, $5 for non-members, and more information can be found at lchshistory.org. If you are interested in learning more about Newsmakers and our previous programs, or if you've missed part of today's conversation and would like to hear it again, all of them are available on our website, which is wpr.org. Our conversation will continue in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall talking to Amy Vock and Denise Christie, and we're talking about the Enduring Families Project and a program that is being hosted there by the La Crosse County Historical Society and La Crosse Area Heritage Center. And I want to talk about how this project has impacted each of you, or at least what people can expect to learn from encountering this material. Amy, I want to start with you because you haven't necessarily been as deeply involved in the subject matter as Denise has as a producer of the project, but just from your position, having encountered these presentations and this material, what have you been able to learn from these historical figures in our community?
I think it's just really important that these historical figures existed in our community. I can't tell you how many times I hear people say that La Crosse's African-American population is a recent addition to the area. And no, like Zachariah Moss was here, you know, in the 1850s, just as, you know, a decade, not quite a decade after Nathan Myrick, a little bit later. So just understanding that their history goes back just as far as the Eurocentric history here in the community. And just like through Silent City, the Enduring Families Project, those reenactments, it's a way for you to connect with the stories. You can see the people, hear the stories that they're having, and you see them as real people. You understand that they existed and are part of our community. So it's just a different connection to history that you can't get through reading a textbook. Like Dr. Bruce Mauser, he did a wonderful job doing all of this research about La Crosse's Black population. But it's very different to see it in a textbook and read through dates and all of these things, but then to see someone dressed up in period costume talking like they're them, you just connect to them as a human being, which is really special.
Mm. So speaking of making that connection, Denise, you've made that connection in a way that obviously most of us in the area never will. You've actually portrayed at least one of the characters here. Tell me about who you've portrayed as part of the Enduring Families Project.
And actually, she started as a figure for Silent City, Lillian Davenport. For 1 year, the Silent City focused on artists of the area, and Lillian Davenport was a vaudeville, a musician. And she went to La Crosse High School, which is now called Central High School, graduated from there in 1913, went on to UW La Crosse, which was called La Crosse Normal. She graduated from UW La Crosse in 1917 with a degree in music. And then she went on to be a vaudeville musician, a pianist, and my first portrayal of her was at the mausoleum for Silent Cities. And so the monologue stayed when the Enduring Families Project came was formulating. And so now I have been portraying her for a while. So Lillian Davenport. And when I didn't know who she was, but after doing some research at the Murphy Library and finding their special section on antiquated material, finding out more information about Lillian Davenport. I was amazed. I mean, Lillian Davenport was born here, and she's buried at Oak Grove Cemetery. Well, I knew that from the portrayal, but I didn't know that her family was buried there also, as are the father of George Pogue, the first African-American to win Olympics, two bronze medals at the 1904 Olympics. His father's buried at Oak Grove Cemetery. There's just so much overlapping that I didn't know about. Circling back to your original question, the person was Lillian Davenport that I portrayed. And it was really eye-opening just learning about her, and that led to learning about others in the area, in the 19th century Black lacrosse.
Other than Lillian Davenport, are there other favorites that you've enjoyed learning about as you've gotten your hands into this project?
Well, I have enjoyed learning about George Pogue. I've had the opportunity to portray George Pogue's mother, Anna Pogue, when the actor portraying George Pogue, and I did a presentation at Pogue Park. I didn't know who George Pogue was, by the way, until I moved here, but that's beside the point. But we did a presentation at Pogue Park last summer, and I totally enjoyed playing her. There have been, there've been countless. I think I've enjoyed just learning about everybody. George Edwin Taylor and Elizabeth Burt. Learning that George Edwin Taylor was the first African American to run for president, and he grew up in West Salem, right down the street from Woodman's grocery store. That's, I mean, Chicago can't claim that. New York can't claim that. But lacrosse can. I mean, how unique is that? And how unique is it to know that Nathan Smith of Nathan Hill was his foster father? And that's absolutely amazing. I think that's so eye-opening, getting to know that. The Enduring Families Project is going to have the opportunity to put these monologues, adapt these monologues into a theater adaptation to be done at the La Crosse Community Theater this spring. And that will be something, exploring these 19th century characters more in a theatrical setting would be very, very interesting. And what's even more interesting is it's a tip of the iceberg, but it's really nice to know that people want to know more. So getting this information into the classrooms, presenting a legacy, there are primary documents that are available for teachers to use in the classroom so that future generations can know this material. That was one purpose of the videos, because we're all getting older and we can't do the in-person things anymore, as much anymore. So those videos will always be available for people to see. And getting the information to the classrooms also.
Yeah, I want to talk about the experiences that these, you talked about so many of these people, Nathan Smith, and the impact that the impact that the Smiths had on so many people, taking in children who were in need and helping them find their way in life. But when people think, a lot of times, when you talk about Black life in America, you talk about segregation and racism and all these things, and people think about that as a Southern problem, especially in that era of history. But what do we know about what kinds of discrimination and racism and the different ways that those entrenched systemic problems affected Black people in the La Crosse area?
In some of the monologues, it is mentioned that many of the residents often had extra rooms in their homes, so that out-of-towners who wanted to visit, who needed a place to stay, could have a place to stay. Because even though there weren't any black codes meaning laws of discrimination, there weren't black codes in La Crosse, but there were ways of letting people know that they were not welcomed in restaurants and hotels. So in many of the monologues, it is mentioned that there were places for people to stay in the event that they could stay overnight because they couldn't stay at hotels and they couldn't stay at restaurants. So that is one thing. Now there has been, a few years ago, the mayor had at the Martin Luther King program had alluded to the fact that La Crosse was a sundown town. Amy, do you know much about that?
As far as I know, there haven't been officially like any ordinances or anything like that that were found, but basically there are things that La Crosse is not very nice and welcoming to the Black community. And like you're saying, exactly the same thing, that there aren't community centers, there aren't hotels that are welcoming, that the Black community is opening up and letting people stay with them. Like the Moss family is using their barbershop as a community center and a boxing ring and everything else, that there weren't other places in the community for them to go. So they were welcome.
One thing that the La Crosse community did have that Bruce Mauser mentions very briefly in some of his literature, there was an African-American literary and debate society. And this was an organization of Black women that helped African-Americans in the community find jobs, find a place to stay. So they were a social network. And they also produced in the late 1890s, they helped organize an August ball. And August balls were called emancipation balls. These were celebrated on August 1st. This was an occasion that celebrated the liberation of enslaved people, first of Haiti before the Civil War. And then after the Civil War, it was a celebration of the liberation of all enslaved people. And George Edwin Taylor, before he left La Crosse and ran for political office, while he was still in La Crosse, he had a newspaper, the Wisconsin Advocate Laborer, Wisconsin Labor Advocate. And he mentions the La Crosse, he mentions the August ball in his August 6th, or, you know, he mentions it a few days after the ball was held. And what's interesting was that Lillian Davenport, the person that I portray, her mother and sister were caterers for that event, for the Emancipation Ball. That's what the research said. Within the confines of the way the situation, the systemic race, you know, the limitations that were faced, there was room, there was an opportunity to grow. The barbershops had apprenticeship programs where young men were taught to read and write and learn the things that they needed to learn. The women had the African American Literary and Debate Society, which was an organization that taught them how to, again, read, write, and make their way in the world. So,
Amy, you're the curator for the Historical Society. I'm wondering what artifacts exist from this era of Black history in the La Crosse area?
Honestly, not a lot. So this is why we're working with the Enduring Families Project to really get these stories out there. If we just think about historical representation and artifact collections and things like that, our early collection is mostly white. Just with the people that were working here and the history that people were focusing on, I don't know if they ever thought outside of the box that they did need to start collecting these stories. On the flip side, we've made a more a more of an intention to be collecting these stories now while they're happening and kind of backfilling our collection. So like the Black Lives Matter movement, we made sure that we collected some artwork. Juneteenth shirts, we have a few of those in our collection too. But the primary thing that we've been able to help locate, especially through the Moss family, are some of these photos. So right now, if you go down to the La Crosse Area Heritage Center, we don't necessarily have artifacts from African Americans there, but we do have a gallery of African American barbers. That was a big part of La Crosse's community, and we're able to tell these stories through photos while we don't have objects to represent the individuals.
Okay. We're talking to Amy Vock and Denise Christie today. We're talking about the La Crosse County Historical Society. We're talking about the La Crosse Area Heritage Center and a presentation that's going on there this weekend, Saturday at 2 p.m. You'll be able to see a presentation from the Enduring Families Project about Black history in this area. And more information about that program is available at lchshistory.org, or you can just Google the La Crosse Historical Society, and that website will come right up. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you would like to reach out to Newsmakers about this subject or any other subject, maybe there's something that you've wanted to hear on the show, please let us know about it. I'd really like to hear from you. My email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our conversation with Denise and Amy continues in just a moment here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall at UW La Crosse in our southwestern Wisconsin studios. Thank you very much for joining us. We've been talking about the Enduring Families Project and an upcoming, upcoming presentation called Black History with the Enduring Families Project. And it's going to be at the La Crosse Area Heritage Center, which is in downtown La Crosse on Main Street. It's coming up on Saturday at 2 p.m. And more information for that is available at lchshistory.org. I want to take at least a little bit of time, Amy, and talk about more broadly the work of the La Crosse County Historical Society and what you're involved there. The more conspicuous aspect of the work would be that which is available to the public, which is the La Crosse Area Heritage Center. What will people find when they visit the center?
So it's kind of an overview of La Crosse's history. The museum actually opened in 2020. It was my COVID project, and it was designed with the second graders in the La Crosse School District in mind. The second graders in La Crosse are the ones that learn La Crosse's history. It helps provide them with a sense of place. It's the foundational history that they learn that helps them connect and grow and further history learning throughout their education. So it kind of covers Ho-Chunk history, lumber industry, brewing industry, those early foundational histories that really started up White La Crosse. But it also goes into, there's some long history in there, African-American history with the Black Barbers, objects that were made in La Crosse, steamboats, of course, the War Eagle is represented with some artifacts, but it's kind of a little bit of a taste overview of the history of La Crosse.
You already talked about some of the challenges, like when you realize decades or even longer later that something, that's important. We should really have, you know, our forebears should have collected these artifacts or whatever. But what are the challenges that present themselves when you're trying to preserve history for people?
One of the biggest problems that people don't necessarily think about is space. So the La Crosse Area Heritage Center, you know, it's an open space that people go and visit. There's about 250 artifacts on display. We actually have a collection of more than 10,000 artifacts.
Wow.
We also have historic Hixson House. Exactly. It is a lot of stuff, but it is also important to the history of lacrosse, telling these stories. So space is a big issue that people don't see because they don't see where I work every day, that we have collection storage and that there are rows of shelves with boxes with labels on them. And every single object in our collection has a catalog record so that we're preserving those stories so that future people, you know, future curators of the Historical Society know what the objects are, why they're in our collection, and why they're important to lacrosse's history. So that's probably the biggest thing is space. People offer us some really exciting objects, and unfortunately, you know, we can't take everything. Long-term, our plan is that we're going to hopefully have a new museum and collection storage space where we can keep growing our collection. We still are growing our collection. It's just there are some limitations. Staffing is also definitely a limitation. So right now at the Historical Society, we are a staff of two. So it's myself and then my coworker, Margaret Lichter, who's responsible for Historic Hixson House, our house museum, and then our guides and docents training program. So we are it. So social media and marketing, you know, everything that the Historical Society does is coming through myself and Margaret.
So you've gotten to peek behind the curtain and see all the cool stuff that's in the boxes with the tags and the written record of where things came from, but it isn't necessarily available to the public. What's the coolest thing back there that you wish you could show people more often?
Oh, one of my favorite artifacts we actually just put on display at the Heritage Center. I know that's a little bit of curator's prerogative, but it's a fun story. It's a good story of lacrosse history. It's actually a Civil War sword that belonged to Wilson Colwell. So he was mayor of lacrosse in 1861 when Lincoln's call for soldiers came. You know, he left his post as lacrosse mayor a few short weeks later and marched down to Madison. Unfortunately, he died at the Battle of South Mountain in 1862, but the one object of his that came back is his sword. It passed down to the family. Eventually in 1965, when the last family member passed away, it became a part of our artifact collection. So it's just so much power that one object can tell. It can tell that whole story. It's lacrosse's involvement in the Civil War. It's the family's connection to their father through the sword. Just so many different things, you know, it's connecting lacrosse to the broader spectrum, you know, that the Civil War is such a broad concept, a bigger thing that we don't necessarily think about lacrosse being a player in that sort of event.
Given the space limitations that you talked about before and the selective nature of your curation process, at least at this time, are there things that are part of the historical record of lacrosse that you really would be interested in getting, or items that like would close an informational gap for you that you know, if someone's out there listening and might have it, that you really would be interested in seeing it?
Oh, definitely. So there are three main areas that we're really seeking collections items in right now. The first one is anything made in lacrosse. Like, lacrosse was a hub of industry, you know, the late 19th, early 20th century, where big companies are actually being started, well, small companies at that time are being started in lacrosse, and then they grow up and are sold off to Kodak and other huge companies. So anything like that, you know, says made in lacrosse on it is definitely a valued thing. We're also focusing on anything that represents underrepresented historical groups in lacrosse. So, you know, the African American community, even the Hmong community, but that even goes into like church groups and women's groups and things like that. Any type of fraternal organizations, they just kind of seem to be a little bit underrepresented in what should be a much better represented piece of our collection. And the last piece is local artwork. So anything that, you know, it could be paintings, it could be wood carvings. We've actually started growing our art collection over the last few years with some very generous donations that have come in. So like artwork of Marion Bean, who was a very talented artist in the late 20th century, who was documenting a lot of lacrosse's historic buildings, sadly, before they were being torn down. So artwork, things made in lacrosse, and then underrepresented groups are kind of our focus. We also do collect other things that have unique stories just to tell the life of lacrosse, we had quite a few wedding dresses just come in, like one from 1902 and the 1930s, and even from the 1970s, just documenting the representations of lacrosse brides. So a little bit of everything.
Denise, regarding the future of the Enduring Families Project, you talked about how you have the research that's gone in through Dr. Mauser's book and through the work of Rebecca Morgan Krieger, sort of focused on that the later part of the 19th century and the early 20th century. Whether this work would fall to you or to someone else, could you envision a time where you are interested in collecting information about Black life in the La Crosse area beyond that period of time?
That's a very interesting question with a very complicated answer. It is my understanding that there was a very healthy Black community from La Crosse's beginnings, and then people moved away. In a lot of the monologues that we have, people moved to different areas, mm-hmm. moved to St. Louis, moved here, moved there, because there are better opportunities for advancement. John Burney, one of the barbers who lived in La Crosse, who, by the way, was one of the organizers of the Old Settlers House, which eventually evolved into the La Crosse County Historical Society. So John Burney moved back to Kentucky after having made his stable here. From what I understand, the Black community after the exodus was very sparse. There weren't a lot of Black people here. George Polk was only the third African-American to graduate from La Crosse High School in 1899. There were a few others, very, very few families. The Moss family stayed, but many of the others did not. But that's what I get. So I'm not quite sure there is a lot of Black history after the exodus until really recently, like the 1990s, when people started, La Crosse started getting more diverse. It's not, you know, it's still not like Minneapolis, but it's
right.
It's not quite as Eurocentric as it was during those early years of the 40s and 50s, et cetera.
Yeah, it seems like you talked about the mayor some years ago referencing La Crosse as a sundown town, which for people who are not familiar, the idea being, correct me if I'm wrong, the idea of a sundown town being that if you're a Black person, you better be out of this town by sundown. And you saw a lot of that in different parts of America, and even if that wasn't officially so, it seems like people leaving for better opportunity elsewhere might be evidence of that, in at least the beginning of evidence of that, don't you think?
And it's really frustrating because, you know, there was such an opportunity to have a strong presence here, but you know, the opportunities, people moved to St. Louis because there was a stronger black presence, and mm-hmm. and Kentucky, where John Burney moved back to, and some of the other 19th century residents moved to other urban areas. It's you know, La Crosse just didn't have a lot to offer as far as upbringing for African-Americans. And Bruce Mauser sort of talked about it in his book about George Polk. It says that Anna Polk, George Polk's mother, wanted more for him. There was a sister, Nellie Polk, and she moved to St. Louis and became a teacher, and Anna Polk wanted her son to leave La Crosse, and he ended up going to UW-Madison, and from there to St. Louis and eventually lived in Chicago because of the limited opportunities that existed here. It's getting better. There are more professionals in La Crosse now, teaching in the schools and the universities, but it's kind of slow.
To kind of go off of that. Oh, sorry.
No, please go ahead, Amy.
Unfortunately, like, this isn't shiny, happy history, but I think it's something that needs to be known. Like, La Crosse does have a history of having a KKK presence, where there are events that were documented in the newspaper, that they're burning crosses on Grandad Bluff and announcements that they're recruiting members and things like that. And I can't help but think that affected La Crosse's Black population, of course, when there's this exodus. I'm sure that they did not feel welcome or safe knowing that this group was here and was actively having events and recruiting members.
Well, it's interesting when you look at just the typical disposition of Midwesterners that people think about. You think that because a rule wasn't written down or because it wasn't talked about that it didn't exist, but we Midwesterners are really good at not talking about things, aren't we?
Very much so.
Well, I want to learn a little bit more before we just have a few minutes left, and I want to learn a little bit more about this program that's coming up. It's coming up Saturday. As you're listening to this on the air, that'll be tomorrow. So coming up at the La Crosse Area Heritage Center at 2 o'clock. Denise, which characters are going to be represented there tomorrow?
When Amy invited us, she said, we'd like to have a program with the Enduring. Well, okay. When she invited us, I was trying to think of a good date for this. And because President's Day is February 19th, I thought it would be really good to have the program on February 17th. And have George Edwin Taylor, who was the first African American to run for president, to tell his story. And because Nathan Smith was his foster father, he would that pairing would be very eye-opening because of the timing to President's Day. And then I also realized that the Heritage Society has the Wall of Barbers. So I also asked the actors who will be representing Lydia Moss. Lydia Moss was a barber. She owned her own barber shop in the 1870s, and that was very unusual for women, but it's in the history books, Lydia Moss Barber Shop. So so Lydia Moss will be represented, as will Ashley Shivers, who was another barber whose picture is there. Now, do I mention the actors?
Oh, sure. You can if you'd like. Yeah, I think people would be interested in that.
Ashley Shivers will be portrayed by Issachar Bryant. Lydia Moss will be portrayed by Rochelle Bruin, who, by the way, owns her own barbershop here in town.
So you have a female who owned a barbershop portrayed by a female who owns a barbershop. That's wonderful.
I mean, you couldn't plan that. So we have two barbers represented, and then again because of President's Day, George Edwin Taylor, who is being portrayed by Daryl Ferguson, and his foster father, Nathan Smith, portrayed by Waltz D. Pierre. And I am going to be portraying Sarah Smith, Nathan Smith's wife. So that's the grouping for Saturday.
Well, that'll be very interesting to see, and people can see that event at 2 o'clock on Saturday at the La Crosse Area Heritage Center. And more information on that is available at the La Crosse County Historical Society's website, which is lchshistory.org. It's free for members. There's a nominal fee for non-members. But more information is available at lchshistory.org. As for this program, our time is up, and I want to thank both of my guests today, Amy Vock, the curator for the La Crosse County Historical Society. Amy, thank you very much for being here on Newsmakers.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Denise Christie is the producer and an actor involved in the Enduring Families Project. Denise, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you.
For sure. There are a couple of opportunities to hear our show every week. Let me tell you about it. You can listen to us Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network, 90.3. We're on Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music, 88.9. And, of course, our programs are always archived online at WPR.org. Just go to WPR.org, click on Shows, and scroll down to Newsmakers. We're right there. I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again for another episode of Newsmakers next week, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.